I'm Rob Sivak in for Tom Hall, and this is Midday. Today, another installment in our monthly Living Questions series, produced in collaboration with the Institute for Islamic, Christian, and Jewish Studies, in which we explore the role of religion in the public sphere. On this edition, we're going to wade into the heated debate over the school voucher program in Maryland. Advocates say the taxpayer-funded vouchers provide low-income families an essential choice of quality religious and private schools. Critics say vouchers amount to state-sponsored religion and threaten the state's public school system. We'll talk with the chairman of Boost, the agency that runs the school voucher program, and with the communications director of the ACLU's Maryland chapter, which opposes it. And later, theater critic J. Wynn Russick joins me with her review of Trust, the new play at Fells Point Corner Theater. All that's coming up right after the news. Hello and welcome to Midday. I'm senior producer Rob Sivak in for Tom Hall, and I'm glad you could join us. On today's edition of Living Questions, we're going to be talking about school choice, a politically freighted term in the United States these days. Ever since the 2010 Republican wave gained control of the U.S. House, Senate, and governor's mansions across the country, states have been introducing voucher programs and voucher-like initiatives such as tax credits or education savings accounts. And this year, 31 states have passed or introduced bills to create or expand some private school choice program. Today, we'll be focusing on the school voucher program used here in Maryland. Last year, Governor Larry Hogan proposed and the Maryland legislature approved a $5 million program called BOOST, an acronym for Broadening Options and Opportunities for Students Today. It provides vouchers or scholarships for students who are eligible for the free or reduced price lunch program to attend eligible non-public schools. In other words, low-income families who qualify are given some of the public funds that the state normally sends to public school districts for their children's education. And those families are allowed to use that money to pay for some or all of the tuition at a religious or non-religious private school of their choice. The governor has proposed raising Boost's funding to $7 million in his new budget and wants to raise it to $10 million a year by 2020. Today, choice is a buzzword that for many parents of school-age children means opting out of what they see as failing or inadequate public schools and enrolling their kids in private and, in most cases, religious schools. Here in Maryland, the school voucher program has passionate supporters and equally passionate detractors who charge that the cost of the voucher program is draining badly needed funds away from the public schools, essentially subsidizing families already attending private religious schools. With me this morning to discuss the pros and cons of Maryland's school voucher program are two people on very opposite sides of the issue. Matthew Gallagher is a Baltimore native and the president and CEO of the Goldsecker Foundation. That's a Baltimore-based community and enterprise development grant organization. He was the chief of staff for former Governor Martin O'Malley from 2009 to 2013, and last year he was appointed by leaders of the Maryland legislature to be chairman of the seven-member advisory board of Boost, which runs Maryland's school voucher program. Welcome, Matt.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Also with me in the studio this afternoon is Meredith Curtis-Good, communications director for the Maryland chapter of the American Civil Liberties Union, the nonprofit legal watchdog group. Meredith has played a role in some of the biggest recent policy issues in Maryland, including campaigns related to abolishing the death penalty, winning marriage equality for LGBT couples, fighting for police accountability, and opposing the Trump administration's temporary travel ban. ACLU Maryland has opposed school vouchers. It's called for the Boost program to be terminated and its funds used to support the state's public school system. Welcome, Meredith.
Thank you so much for having me.
Let me begin with you, Matt, and ask you to lay out basically what the mission of Boost is, the overall goal of providing these additional funds to subsidize private or religious school options.
Sure. In 2016, the Maryland General Assembly, through the budget bill, placed about $5 million into the budget that was made available for children that qualify for free and reduced lunch. And they were given the option, if they qualified, that they could take a Boost Scholarship Award and apply it to tuition costs at eligible schools in Maryland. For some time, the Maryland has had a private school textbook program where Maryland provides some support to schools that service low-income families. And if the school participates in that program, then the eligible children were in a position that they could apply Boost scholarship funds to those schools. So while there are some private schools that are eligible, there are tuition limits on those schools that can participate in the program, which limits the number of private schools to which the Boost scholarship recipients can apply their funds.
Mm-hmm. Are there any other criteria for a school being eligible to be a beneficiary of these
Sure.
funds?
Sure. So there's a screen basically for tuition levels. So some of the more expensive private schools that your listeners might be familiar with, Boost Scholarship students wouldn't be eligible to attend those schools. And as you noted before, there's a high concentration of religious schools that participate in the program. The schools are not allowed to discriminate in their admissions practices based on, you know, race, color, creed, sexual orientation. And the schools are required to offer written assurances to Maryland State Department of Education to ensure that they are adhering to those non-discriminatory practices. And there's a process that MSDE goes through to certify that.
Mm-hmm. And do the students at these private or religious schools also have to take any standardized tests? How does the state monitor the performance of the students in these schools?
So the Boost program is governed by language that was in the 2016 budget bill. There is new language that's being debated right now so that if the General Assembly and the governor decide to continue to fund this program next year, there could potentially be new rules and regulations and guidelines that happens. But the budget bill from last year that we're operating under right now requires the schools to offer some type of assessment. But the assessments are not uniform across all of the participating schools. They just have to have a certain assessment in place to meet the requirement right now.
Mm-hmm. So, Meredith, this is the essence of school choice. They're opting out of public schools and choosing to go, but to private, and I guess 97% of the schools that the Boost funds go to are religious schools, I think. What's the ACLU's problem with the way this program is set up and the way it's working?
One thing I do want to reinforce the point that you're making about most of the schools being religious schools. I think that a lot of people, when they've considered this program, that don't currently have children in religious schools themselves, you know, a lot of those families have been fighting for the Boost program. There's a wider sense of who it applies to. And there are 97% of the schools are religious. There are 176 schools that received funding last year, and 172 of them are religious schools. Hmm. And so, you know, that's an important aspect of this. I do want to say something about the ACLU's position about Boost. The ACLU is an organization that fights very hard for religious liberty. We uphold the right of religious institutions and schools to set their own curriculum. The issue for us is whether it's appropriate for taxpayers to subsidize schools and their religious teachings. Mm-hmm. And so the ACLU is what's a civil liberties organization. We care about liberties to follow your own religious faith and religious institutions. We're also a civil rights organization, and we care about the right of all students in Maryland to get the adequate and equitable education that they are guaranteed under the state constitution. That's a promise that the ACLU of Maryland has been fighting for since the mid-1990s, when we actually brought a lawsuit on behalf of all students in Baltimore City Schools, because they were not getting an adequate education. They did not have equitable funding for their schools. And we have been fighting for this ever since.
So you're making the case that the funds that are appropriated to the Boost program, these subsidies to the effective subsidies to religious schools, are drawing away from funding that could be used for public school improvement.
Absolutely. You think to the situation that we're in right now. So we got a report recently from the state-appointed Kerwin Commission, which is the part two of the Thornton Commission that was back in 2002, that looked at statewide, what are the needs for our schools? And that commission came up with a number this year that there was a $2.9 billion need for school systems across the state, and especially those school systems that have lower resources to meet the needs of the students in their jurisdiction. And so we're very focused on that reality. We're not arguing that there aren't needs that need to be addressed in our public schools in the state. There certainly are. But is this the appropriate time to be diverting funds that could be going to those public schools, which clearly have a very strong need both statewide and especially here in Baltimore?
Yeah. Matt, how do you address those concerns? Obviously, this is money that's not being spent. The $7 million or the $10 million that Governor Hogan is talking about by 2020, that's $10 million is a lot of money for a school system that's hurting.
Sure.
How do you feel about that?
Well, just one clarification in terms of the subsidy. The Boost scholarships are awarded to the eligible families. That's who the money goes to. Then they can apply it to the schools that are eligible to receive the Boost students. So I do just want to make that clarification in terms of who is being subsidized and who the money goes
to. Right. The money doesn't go directly to the schools.
Exactly.
It goes to the families.
Exactly.
Who then pay it to the school.
And I'll be very candid and honest with you. I mean, I agree with Meredith's point. The state's obligation is to provide an adequate and equitable education for all public school students all over the state of Maryland. And many people, including the ACLU, have worked very, very hard for that through the years. Right now, we have a situation in Maryland where I think everybody realizes that the education formula is inadequate. When you have a situation like where Baltimore City Public Schools see a $42 million reduction in aid from one year to the next, I believe there are another seven jurisdictions right now that are receiving less money than they would last year. The formula is not working, and there's a lot of important work that has to go on to fix that going forward. And I suspect that there'll be a very significant price tag associated with that. Right now, the public school education funding is governed by Thornton. There is a formula in place. The formula gets funded. It hasn't been fully funded in some prior years, but the formula gets funded, and really the Boost program is in addition to that. Now, you know, in a budgeting exercise, could somebody say, I'd like to take that 5 or 7 or 10 million, whatever it is, and apply it to public schools? Sure, they could. But the state right now would have an argument that we're fully funding the Thornton formula, which I agree is inadequate. You know, it becomes a question of, is this an either or choice, or can you fund public education adequately and still advance a program like Boost? Just the last point. The Boost board and, you know, the people who are governing this wasn't a policy decision whether or not to do Boost. The money was allocated. You know, myself and six other people were appointed to allocate it in a way that we thought was consistent with what the General Assembly wanted. And that's what we've tried to do. You know, our choice wasn't whether or not to do it. It was what's the best way to do it.
Mm-hmm. Meredith, do you accept the argument that that you can do both? That you can subsidize these school choice options and also support fully the public school system? Does that compute in your mind?
Theoretically, you could if that's what we were actually doing, but it's not. You know, for the last several years, I don't think you could reasonably say that the Thornton formula has been fully funded. Inflation has not been fully taken into account, and that's part of the reason why the Baltimore City school system is in the deficit, the very serious deficit that is being experienced now. So if that was actually what was happening, perhaps the conversation would be different. But that's not what's happening. And in fact, not only have we not been fully funding Thornton for several years, but we're also looking at how 10 years after Thornton, that formula is no longer adequate and needs to be updated. Mm-hmm. So that, in our view, that needs to be our focus. And, you know, it's important to take this in terms of the history. And the first subsidy for private and religious schools began in Maryland in the early 2000s. It started with subsidies for textbooks for students. And then it was expanded for textbooks and technology for students. And then a couple of years ago, without any public hearing, there were allocations put directly into the budget to subsidize repairs at religious schools, private schools. And now we're looking at the addition of funding that began last year for Boost. And so these are the numbers. Just last year, we're not just talking about $5 million. For Boost, we're also talking about $3.5 million that went to primarily religious school buildings. And we're looking at an allocation just last year of $6 million for non-public textbooks and technology. And that allocation has been going on for a decade. So what we're really seeing is that it begins small, but there are a variety of avenues that are taken to find to infuse government resources into private and what is mostly in Maryland religious schools. So it's an expansion. And at the same time, there's been a contraction in the investment overall that has happened in public schools. So we really need to be asking ourselves, is that the way we want to prioritize things?
Yeah, we'll pick up on that point. Meredith Curtis-Good is communications director for the Maryland chapter of the American Civil Liberties Union, a group that opposes the Maryland School Voucher Program. And Matthew Gallagher is the president and CEO of the Goldsecker Foundation, and since last year, he's been chairman of the 7-member advisory board of Boost, the year-old state agency that runs Maryland's school voucher program. We're going to take a short break now, and when we come back, we'll be happy to hear what you think about school vouchers. Are you okay with tax dollars being used to help low-income families send their kids to private and religious schools? Give us a call. 410-662-8780 or email us at midday@wypr.org. Back in 90 seconds. Stay with us.
You're listening to Midday here on your NPR News Station, 88.1 WYPR.
Welcome back to Midday. I'm senior producer Rob Sivak in for Tom Hall. This programming note coming up tomorrow on Midday. It's the Midday News Wrap, and guest host Nathan Sterner will be sitting in for Tom. He'll review the week's headlines with Amy Goldstein, who's been covering the national health care debate for The Washington Post, Michael Dresser, the Baltimore Sun's statehouse reporter, and Barry Raskovar, a former Sun reporter who now blogs on local and national politics at politicalmaryland.com. You'll want to tune in for their analysis of this very busy news week. If you've just joined us, this is another edition of Living Questions, the monthly series we produce in collaboration with the Institute for Islamic, Christian, and Jewish Studies, in which we explore the role of religion in the public sphere. Today, we're talking about Maryland's year-old school voucher program with one of its staunchest advocates, Matthew Gallagher, is the president and CEO of the Goldsecker Foundation. And since last year, he's been chairman of the advisory board of Boost, the state agency that runs Maryland's school voucher program. Also with us is Meredith Curtis-Good. She's communications director for the Maryland chapter of the American Civil Liberties Union and one of the staunchest critics of the school voucher program. And we invite you to join the conversation. You can call us at 410-662-8780. That's 410-662-8780. Or email us at midday@wypr.org. Or you can tweet us at @MiddayTomHall. Okay, so what we need to really focus on, I think, in the few minutes that we have left in today's program, this question of state support for religion just strikes me as the fundamental question. Even though it looks like the Supreme Court has supported the notion of state funding for religious schools, there are continued pushbacks from the states, and there are in many state legislatures there have been so-called Blaine amendments that apparently prohibit direct funding of religious organizations. I'm not quite sure where the battleground is, but here in Maryland, it seems to me that there is some significant public concern about this. Polls have shown a very strong public resistance to the idea of direct subsidies to state schools. Yet the program has been approved in the state legislature. Where, Meredith, the ACLU in Maryland here, you know, is making the case that this is an infringement of the constitutional separation of church and state, the so-called Establishment Clause. Explain.
Well, a lot of it can be seen directly in, how the schools, what are the curriculums that they use for science? What are the curriculums that they use for health and teaching about human sexuality? These are all things that state schools that schools within the state public schools have curriculum about that we can evaluate. And there's less transparency primarily the religious schools. And you can see when you go through some of the websites of the schools, ways that this could become a problem in terms of taxpayer investment. Things like teaching and cultivating biblical values and lifestyles. Well, what happens to those LGBT kids who are in those classrooms? You know, what is the experience like for them? Is it a place where they are feeling supported and welcome? And then there are other things like, there's another school where they, where part of their curriculum is to describe God's plan for human sexual behavior. And there's another school that uses the Bob Jones curriculum, which is a fundamentalist Christian curriculum. You know, what do they teach in that school related to science and human sexuality? You know, we don't know. And these are some of the sticky things that can come up when you are talking about religious education. They, again, have the right to set their own religious curriculum. But should the taxpayers be subsidizing that? And what is the experience of the students who receive those teachings, if they're LGBT? And we also have some other concerns that are not precisely related to religion. There are some protections related to the admission of students. I think it's much more up in the air, anti-discrimination protections for students in retention. You know, what is the experience of a student who has disabilities? I think that there are a lot of serious questions about who ends up at these schools, whereas the public schools are, their mandate is to serve all students. And I think that we need to be thinking seriously about that.
Mm-hmm. Matt, you mentioned earlier that there are criteria, non-discriminatory standards that are required of all schools that are participating in this program. But that doesn't necessarily apply to, to students once they're in the school. Are there any protections that are required, any monitoring of the conditions under which these students are, experiencing the schools?
My understanding is that the schools have to certify each year to participate in the textbook program as well as the BOOST program, the non-discriminatory policies that they have as they apply to the students who attend those schools.
On the admission side, but does it continue into the daily practice, the daily interactions of the students and faculty among the students? Are there safeguards?
It applies to the students. It does not apply to the faculty. I want to be very clear about that. Beyond the admissions process, I am not aware in terms of how the anti-discriminatory language is applied. Mm-hmm. I am just not familiar with that issue. I know that MSDE has a process that they have to go through to get the assurances of the schools, what they have to provide in writing, but I'm not sure how far that extends into the practices of the school beyond the admissions process.
Mm-hmm. And Matt, I understand that this is not your policy. You didn't create BOOST, but you are administering it and
sure.
helping to allocate the funds. How do you feel about the idea of taxpayer money going to private or predominantly religious schools. Does that give you trouble at all? Are you concerned about that, or do you think that's a perfectly good school choice option?
Well, I think the state of Maryland makes an incredible investment in education of all types. And when you raise the religious issue, there are obviously public funds that flow to religious universities. There's public funds that flow to religious hospitals. You know, some of the largest social service providers in the state mm-hmm. are religious institutions or affiliated with religious institutions. You know, again, I think it's an important distinction that the Boost scholarship money goes to the eligible families. And the eligible families are making a determination as to what they think are in the best interest of their children. Mm-hmm. From a state perspective, you know, the state does have an obligation to adequately and equitably educate every child. So if the kids who are in the Boost program decided tomorrow that they're going to go into the public school system, they can enroll. The state has to educate them. And there's a cost allocation that would go along with that. You know, I think this is really about choice and parents making a decision as to what's best for their kids individually. But there is a financial argument to be made that the cost of sending the child to the public school would, in most cases, be much more expensive than the amount of money that they're receiving in the Boost Award.
Yeah. We're going to go to the phones because we've got a bunch of people lined up who want to chime in here. And the first is Jai from Baltimore. Let's hear what you have to say.
Good morning, everyone. Good morning, everyone.
Good afternoon.
Thank you for taking my call. This is actually a topic that is very important to me. I worked. I not only went through the Baltimore County Public School System for all 12 years. I also worked for the Baltimore County Public School System as well, and we always kept tabs on what was going on in city schools as well. The question that I wanted to pose in regard to these vouchers. The fact that we're talking about how we need information to be given to families in order to make a proper choice as to which school they'd like to send their children to, I know that one of the most volatile topics of discussion at this point in time regarding public schools is the school-to-prison pipeline. And I'd really be interested to know if any type of study has been done into, you know, the experience of students or whether or not there is a school-to-prison pipeline that exists in these private institutions or in these religious institutions.
Meredith, do you want to take that?
Thank you so much for your call about that, Jai. I would. It's a really good opportunity to talk about another bill that's actually being considered in the General Assembly right now that would ban suspensions and expulsions in public schools for the youngest students, students pre-K through second grade. And we are very concerned about ways in which the way that schools deal with discipline and whether and how supported teachers are in dealing with discipline issues and how that can track a student throughout their education experience and make them more likely to come into contact with the criminal justice system. And again, these are protections that are going to apply to public schools, right? We're trying to set a very high standard in our public schools that say that we should not be suspending and expelling students. And I don't know what the standards are in a particular school, a particular private school. But what I can tell you is this is an example, in my view, of ways in which we can control and keep track of what is happening in public schools and what the experience of students are in public schools, because they have to report on these things. They have to be transparent about what's happening.
Yeah. Matt, any thoughts on maintaining some information flow about the disciplinary environment in some of the schools? I mean, do you have any idea what they are?
As it relates to Boost, there's no provision for reporting requirements in that way. It's a first-year program, and I suspect, just based on some of the conversations I've had in Annapolis this year, that the General Assembly is going to be interested in getting more feedback on a whole host of ways that the program operates and what the outcomes are. But at this point, it's really too early. There are broader studies that would look at outcomes related to kids who go to public versus private school or parochial school.
And they haven't been particularly favorable to these private or religious schools in a lot of voucher programs around the country. I've seen studies that suggest that student performance is not significantly better and sometimes worse than
well,
than in the
I'm not sure
system.
which studies to which you're reporting. I mean, I'm not aware of a data set that would really apply in Maryland, you know, again, given the the relative infancy of the program here at Boost.
All right. Let me go to another call. Christian in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, panel. Thanks for taking my call. Have two quick comments to make. Number one, I'm a parent. I'm going to put my parent hat on, and I actually have children both in public and in private schools, and I think just the concept of getting a little bit of relief from taxes that we pay in to support, you know, my family's decision to go to private school, particularly Catholic school, I think, you know, should be explored more. Like, you know, middle-class families that choose to send their kids to private school because of the inadequacies of the public school, I think we're being doubly penalized. One, happen to take our kids, they can't not being able to send them to the neighborhood school, and then in turn, you know, really paying to send them there, I think is problematic. So, you know, programs that help, you know, help families to support their decisions, I think is fine. My counter on it, when I put my K-12 educator hat back on, I think that the voucher conversation, you know, I think the conversation should be really around vouchers is really how do we hold public school systems accountable to meet the needs of the students? Mm-hmm. And I think fundamentally that's what's happening is that the public schools are not meeting, you know, the needs of a lot of students and families that have the means are getting out. But there are some families that are left behind. So I would really like to hear the representative from the ACLU about how you guys are really holding school systems accountable to do the right thing by students. And I'll take my comments off air.
Thanks, Christian. Yeah, Meredith?
Thank you so much for your call, Christian. I think that, you know, our work on public education is focused in two areas. One is to make sure that they have the funding that they need in order to actually have the programs and the services for students and families that are most important. And then we are also working on the side of what is offered to families. For instance, for the past several years, we have been working very closely with leaders in Baltimore and other areas around the state to support community schools. And community schools are more of a resource where it's a hub where people can get a variety of services depending on what the needs are of that particular community. And this is a model that is very strong and increasingly popular. And I encourage you to get in touch with us if this is an interest that you have to support the idea of community schools, which is really starting to get a lot of traction.
Mm-hmm. Matt, do you think that there is any harm being done to the public schools and the public school concept by having this alternative available to so many people and thousands of families? Are you concerned at all about potential undercutting of the public school goal?
I think everybody wants the strongest possible public schools you can have in every jurisdiction of Maryland. In the case of the Boost program, again, just to remind people that the eligible families, you know, very strict income eligibility requirements in terms of qualifying for free and reduced lunch. So these are families that on average are making less than $29,000 a year, mm-hmm. and they're making the extraordinary decision to make these investments of their own money into a private education for their kids, you know, supplemented with the scholarship funds. You know, at this point, you know, there are, you know, billions invested in the public education system versus 5 million that's being invested in the Boost program. So it's very targeted, again, at low-income eligible families. It is a modest program at this point. I expect that there's going to be quite a bit of assessment going forward. So I don't think it's really a threat to the public school system. And I don't think it really detracts away from the arguments about making sure that the public education system is adequately funded.
Yeah.
I think even the Boost supporters are very supportive of making sure that K-12 public education receives the resources that they need.
We have time for another phone call. Howlett in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Yes, I think the big question is about educating all of the children. And I think the question that a parent would have would be, what would be the best education that they could get for their child, and it wouldn't be a question of either you have to have everybody in public or poor people have to be in public school, or you have to give them, or you have to put them in private school. I think that's a thing that parents could decide. You know, it might be a parochial school or a private school where they got some money and they could send the kid to the school. And if more people went to parochial schools, if the state put more money in parochial schools and the parochial schools educated the children and the public school decreased slightly as a result, I think that wouldn't be such a bad thing. I think the thing about the parochial schools that I'd be concerned about would be if they enforce religious studies. They used to have, some of them would have religious studies were required, and I think that would be a thing that shouldn't be required for people to get this state money. And then if the kids weren't treated well, the parents have an option to say, okay, I'm going to withdraw them from the parochial school and put them in public school, which I saw when I went to school. Some parents, they felt like they put too much emphasis on religion. They took the kid out of the parochial school and put them back in public school.
Yeah. Howell, thank you very much for your call. That's a very good point. Matt, there's no oversight on the curriculum or the particular types of classroom activities that go on in the schools that participate in Boost. Are there
are certain requirements that are laid out in the budget bill for participating in the program and participating in the textbook program. In terms of, there are certain assessments that have to meet state or federal requirements that have to be issued. So there are some guidelines in terms of what the schools have to do and what the schools are supposed to offer.
But in terms of a religious school perhaps requiring students to take a religious course that they might not necessarily want to take, I mean, there are some concerns about that kind of indoctrination, if you will, that students would be exposed to in a religious school if they weren't there necessarily by, because of their faith.
It's not prescriptive in terms of that the Boost students have to be excluded from, any type of religious education.
Yeah.
But again, it's the families are making the choice proactively to attend these schools.
Yeah.
So there's a certain, awareness as to what they're buying into and what they're applying the scholarships to.
Yeah. Meredith, last words.
Yeah, I just wanted to share briefly a personal story. I actually went to Catholic school for a number of years. And what I found was it was actually a great experience. I loved it. And then when I transferred out of my my Catholic school into a public school, I was really behind in math and science. So I think it really just underscores the importance of, if you're going to make any subsidy to religious and private schools, we need to hold them to the same standard that the public schools are held.
Okay. That's all the time we have, I'm afraid. Matthew Gallagher is the president and CEO of the Goldsecker Foundation, and since 2016, he's been serving as the chairman of the advisory board of Boost, the state agency that administers Maryland's school voucher program. And Meredith Curtis-Good is communications director for the Maryland chapter of the American Civil Liberties Union. It's midday. I'm Rob Sivak. Stay with us while J. Wynn Russick is up next with her weekly review.
You're listening to Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.